Hello. We're going to do something a little different tonight, as you can see. We're going to help transition this class series to the drop-in sitting that the Sims has decided to institute starting this Sunday. And the Sims board and Rodney have asked Carrie and these others here to provide the leadership for an ongoing young adult sitting every other Sunday. So I wanted to take the opportunity to introduce you to the leadership team and let them speak for themselves a little bit. I know all of them somewhat, a little bit, enough to feel confident that the group, you as a group, will be well led by them. And they have a range of exposure to different teachings and traditions, and have done some extensive practice. And I think that there'll be a good mix of kind of exposure to the range of teachings that are available in the Vipassana tradition in the West. And I think that they'll be very representative of that and serve you well. I'm excited about it because when I offer retreats, for the most part, there are a lot of people my age there. And some younger people come, but it's been nice to come to these classes and see all younger people here. Younger people, I know you don't think of yourself as younger, but adults. So I'm really happy that you're interested and that Sims has decided to support having an ongoing group so that you can meet together, practice together, and form your own community. And I think that's really important. It certainly was for me when I started, and the teachers and the volunteers at the meditation center where I was doing my practice were all of the same age. And so I think it's important to have leaders and teachers or those who are sharing the Dhamma of your own age group so that you can really connect with them and resonate with the way they articulate the value of the Dharma and the value of mindfulness practice in their life. So I'm happy to be able to introduce Carrie, one of Rodney's trainees, and let her speak for herself.
As Steve said, my name is Carrie Peterson, and actually so the four of us were meeting the other day and talking about the group and what to call it. We decided that we couldn't even figure out really the boundaries between Gen X, Gen Y, and Millennials, so we would just call it Under 40, just to cover everyone. So the group will be open to people in their 20s and 30s. There already is a teen circle, teen mindfulness circle, and a teen class. So it'll be called Under 40, a practice group for people in their 20s and 30s. So I'll just speak a little bit about my background and a little bit about Seattle Insight. I'm a local Dharma leader here, which just means that I offer classes and groups and meet with individuals. And I've been assisting Rodney, who's the guiding teacher here, on retreats for a number of years. So I've been involved with the community for about 10 years. My own practice life, it's always interesting to try to find a beginning point for where that started. So I think actually for many of us, the questioning and the searching starts quite young, can start quite young. I think that's true for a lot of us. But my more formal, dedicated practice began in my early 20s. And I actually started trying it on my own first, a bit out of desperation. So I was living in a studio basement apartment, kind of bleak circumstances, and, you know, in a tumultuous relationship with a very difficult job, standard fare, and started locking myself in my closet to try to follow instructions in books that I was reading. And actually had some benefit from that. But again, it was out of this kind of desperation, like I've got to do something. And I kept going like that for a while, kind of on my own, trying to see what I could uncover. And then I started a yoga practice, which really helped me for the first time experience what a lessening of internal tension felt like. And I hadn't actually known how much tension I was carrying until I experienced some relief from it. So it was actually quite profound. And right around that time, I met with a friend of a friend, and it was just a very simple circumstance. We were having tea, and all of a sudden I looked at him, and a few of you have heard this story, so I apologize if you've already heard it before, but I looked at this person and realized that he wasn't struggling, that there was something quiet within him that I didn't have access to, that I didn't know about. He wasn't struggling with himself. He wasn't trying to get anything from me, and he wasn't striving. So there was a real sense of peace. And something flipped in my brain at that moment, and the phrase that came was, I'm going in the wrong direction. And it's very clear that my practice, and really my life up until that point, had been trying to get over myself, trying to fix myself, really treating myself as a problem to be solved. And so spiritual practice was trying to get me out of myself, over myself. And here's this person who's really at ease in his own skin. And I realized that I was going in the wrong direction. So that started a real urgent inquiry to understand how my mind worked, how I was generating this, I wouldn't have called it suffering at the time, but tension. And so I kind of dove headfirst into retreating at that point, and the retreat center that was convenient, available, and affordable was in Southwest Washington, led in the style of Guenca. I know some of you probably know. It's a very intensive practice from 4 in the morning until 9:30 or 10 at night. And even though that first retreat was the most difficult experience I'd ever been through, emotionally and physically, I could really feel that there was benefit and value from doing that, from being in a room of people in that container, dedicated to finding out how my mind worked. So I was very, very inspired and kind of went forward from there and practiced in that style for a few years. And then gradually found my way to Cloud Mountain Retreat Center. I went there to live for a year and a half, in 2003. So lived on staff and really became familiar with a different range of teachings, different styles, different approaches, got to know teachers, really started to talk about my practice for the first time, which was really important. And then I met Rodney there. He often offers retreats there. So when I left Cloud Mountain, I spent some time in Asia and then landed in Seattle again and became a part of Seattle Insight after that. I'm also part of a teacher training right now. I'm halfway through a 4-year teacher training that takes place at meditation centers on both coasts, so both the West Coast and the East Coast. So I'm part of a group of teacher trainees from all over the country, and hopefully as some of them pass through Seattle, they might also get a chance to offer a bit of their perspective at our group as it continues. So that's one of my intentions as well. And just a bit about the aspiration for the group. So Seattle Insight as an organization has been around for about 20 years and sprung up, started as a small sitting group and grew to, on any Tuesday night, there's often 200 or so people here. Not to mention all the smaller groups of people who meet on their own. So it's quite a large, thriving organization now. And they've all kind of, or many of them have sort of grown up around Rodney and his teachings. So as he's aged, so has the Sangha, ourselves included. But often what that means, and we just did a census last year, is the vast majority of the people who come to Seattle Insight regularly are under 40, or over 40, even over 50. So I think it's really vitally important that people who are younger and inspired to practice, as Steve was saying, have a chance to explore that amongst people who are in the same or similar life circumstances. So exploring issues of identity, making your way in the world, trying to bring this practice into daily life, into work, relationships, all of that, which in some ways are universal human endeavors, but can be particular and particularly intense for people in their 20s and 30s. I know for myself there was a period of time when I was practicing intensively when I felt as though I kind of lost my peer group. So most of my primary relationships were with people at Sims who were the age of my parents. And I deeply valued those relationships and still love those people. But I missed actually being able to share with people who are my own age. So I think it's something that we can offer now. And this new center opened at the end of July. So I was actually planning to start a group next year sometime. Now that we have the space, we can make it available on a wider scale. But then Steve came through with his group and just kind of a new wave of interest, and Suyin wanted to start something. So in kind of a collaborative way, we started talking about what we could offer as a group. And it won't be so much a class like we've been doing here, a class series in which you come and listen to a talk and there are a few questions and you walk away, but it will be more, we'll offer some reflections based on our own practice experience, but there'll be a lot more time for discussion and dialogue, really, about how to bring this practice alive in daily life, what the obstacles are, what the benefits are, what the joys are, and hopefully we can support and encourage each other in that way. So I'm really excited and looking forward to it, and we have a lot of support and looking forward to working with these three others as well. So, pass it to Steve.
Hello, good evening. My name is Suyin Chang, and as Carrie mentioned, I am really excited to actually have the opportunity to meet with people my own age in this Sims space. Similar to Gary, I've noticed that I'm often the youngest on the younger end on Tuesday nights, and also on retreats that I've been sitting. And so it's been really powerful, even in these last 5 weeks, to be sitting among all of you. So thanks so much for coming and being a part of this community. a little bit about how I came into the meditation practice. Well, I would say that I came into the meditation practice in 2006 and then Dharma practice in 2009. And the distinction is that in 2006, I was simply just looking for an effective stress reduction tool, which you all probably know, meditation kind of fits the bill for that. But I was in a very stressful job, my first job as a clinical social worker out of graduate school, and was feeling really unsupported. I didn't have a supervisor. The organization that I was a part of does really good work, but at the same time felt like it didn't have a structure in place to support me, and I was getting assigned to all of these cases that I didn't know how to deal with, sort of like, here, work with this four-year-old girl, and she doesn't speak English. So I was just kind of in over my head in many ways. And then when a lot of my caseloads started struggling with suicidality, seemingly all at the same time, I became incredibly stressed out. And just kind of on my own started meditating as a way to manage the stress. And I think one Wednesday Googled Seattle meditation and found that Rodney was doing a day long. It's actually kind of a combination of the beginning class series that he offers that Saturday, and I just showed up to it having no meditation experience. And I remember it being the first time in, at that point, several months that I felt completely at ease, and I mean, my mind was going a little bit crazy, and I had several emotions running through me, but I was able to know all of those things and be with everything without the resistance that usually comes from kind of trying to push something like that away, which I had been doing for 7 months. And I was really, I say this a lot, but I do feel really lucky that my life was such a mess at that point, because the more things felt crazy, the more I meditated, and the more I meditated, the more I began to see that not only was this practice an effective stress reduction tool, but it was also something that allowed me to learn a lot about myself. At that point, I had thought of myself as a self-aware person, but that was revealed to not be the case once I began Dharma practice. And since then, over the years, it's, to my surprise, opened into something, dare I say, more spiritual feeling. I grew up in sort of an atheistic family, so that was really surprising when that started happening. So I've been able to, many of you know that Sims brings all sorts of teachers from all over the place here. That's how I met Steve, actually, initially a couple of years ago. He doesn't remember me, but he used to come through before he lived here, and similarly was exposed to all sorts of different styles of teaching, and have just felt that the practice itself is such an effective tool. I've always been struck by how simple the practice can be, yet how profound the insight that can be revealed. So every opportunity I got, I was sitting weekend retreats, and the first week-long retreat at Cloud Mountain that I sat was with Rodney and a teacher that he teaches with most often from Boston, named Narayan. And it just completely transformed my life. Just in a very almost unsettling, shocking way. And every other retreat I've been on, it feels like what has been learned is just kind of deepens and expands. And so I have this faith that it can only continue in that direction. And I began to see the Dharma practices as so important that I decided I wanted to sit a 3-month meditation retreat last year, and there happened to be some funding for it to make that happen. And by the time I decided I wanted to go, it just didn't seem like a big deal to resign from my job and leave my partner and do it. And that has similarly kind of deepened my trajectory, my path here. And I will say that kind of coming back into Seattle, there were strangely a lot of young people on a 3-month meditation retreat, which was an unusual experience for me. And coming back here to Seattle, it was something that, a feeling that I wanted to replicate here, and kind of seeing young people come and go through Tuesday nights. And I've also, a few of you here sit with me in a smaller Sims KM group, which I've been helping to facilitate for the last couple years. And that's just been so rewarding to kind of be able to share the discovery and this path with people who are going through kind of developmentally in life the same things that I'm going through. So I am really excited and hope to continue to be able to expand that community here on Sunday evenings.
Meditators, I don't know anything about you and how you got to where you are, so it's really inspiring to hear your stories of how you started practice and where you find yourself now in relation to your own practice and this group. It's really pretty amazing.
I graduated, I decided to do retreat. And The Vipassana technique that's taught at a Goenka retreat, some of you might have experienced this, is a little bit different from what we've been practicing here, and actually what I've been practicing for the most part. It's a very physical experience. It's like a body scanning. You start at the top of your head, you go down to the tip of your toes, you go back up, and you get more and more and more subtle. And the teacher gave Dharma talks on video screens every night. So we watched these hour-long talks, and he would talk about the things that we supposedly would start noticing, all of these sort of wild experiences that he told us we should expect to experience, and I wasn't experiencing any of them. And I was sure that I was doing it wrong, and I was wasting my time, and it was hard, and I'm not a morning person, and we were up at 4. I mean, it was just, I didn't have any idea what was happening. But it was so strange. I was a smoker. I've been smoking for over 10 years, and at the very end of the retreat, my friend and I went together, and we were driving away, and he said, "Are you going to have a cigarette?" And I was like, "I'm just going to wait. I'm going to have a cigarette. I'm just going to wait." And at some point, we got out of the car specifically so I could have a cigarette, and we were having a conversation, and I took the cigarette out, and he was talking to me, and I was trying to smoke and listen at the same time, and I realized I couldn't do it. That, like, I was actually multitasking to try to smoke and listen at the same time. It was so weird. And so I asked him to stop talking so that I could have my cigarette. And so he did, and so I lit the cigarette, and I don't know, it was like I took 2 drafts off the cigarette, and it was awful. And I was really worried. And over the next few weeks, what I started to notice that it was that I wanted to have a cigarette every time. I kind of didn't know what to do with myself. And it didn't take very long for me to realize I couldn't do it anymore. And so people started noticing that I wasn't smoking, and they were like, "Oh, you're quitting, that's so great." And I was like, no, I'm not quitting, because it wasn't an intention. It just was something that started to happen because of the awareness that sort of woke up doing this practice. And I practiced in that tradition for a little while. It felt really difficult to keep up with the sort of intensity of it. So it would sort of wax and wane. And I met someone through one of those retreats who introduced me to Sims. And so I started going to Sims. And Sharon Salzberg came to town pretty soon after I started sitting here. And she actually guided us through a meditation at the beginning of the sitting, and it was a very different practice than what I had been taught, and yet they both called it Vipassana. So I was very confused, but she seemed really approachable. So at the end of the sitting, I went up to her and I said, "You know, I've been practicing this Goenka style of Vipassana, and what you're talking about seems very different." And she said, "It's true. He was actually one of my first teachers." And I said, "I know, that's why I'm confused." And she said, "I would recommend that you take a look at the suttas." And that was like all she said. And I was like, "Oh man, I'm in trouble." Because I knew that, like, that's it. Like, I was just going to go. And I didn't know where it was going to take me, but I was too compelled to let it go. And that was really the beginning of starting to practice with Seattle Insight. And about a year and a half later, I sat 6 weeks and really had a transformative experience. The kind of awareness that I started to develop of my own experience, and really feeling like I was able to get underneath the sort of like superficial level of awareness I was able to have before that. And around that time, I started thinking about going back to school to get my master's in psychology, and I was looking into somatic psychology programs because I was a body worker. And around that time, I realized that Buddhist practice was really becoming the sort of foundation of my life and all of the work that I was doing with people anyway. And so I ended up doing a contemplative psychology program at Naropa. University in Boulder, Colorado. And then when I graduated from that program, did a 3-month retreat at the Insight Meditation Society. So my practice feels like it's sort of taking over a little bit more and more and more. And you know, it's funny, the other day somebody asked me, a friend of a friend said, "Can you just tell me, like, what it is that you get out of doing that?" And I started laughing, and he was like, "Sorry, I don't mean," and I was like, "No, it's fine. I wish I had an easy answer to that question. I feel like I want a, like, sort of elevator speech about how to answer that question. It changes all the time." I think what I was thinking about in talking to everyone here tonight was the easiest thing to say, the simplest thing maybe for me right now, is that I still get caught up a lot in my stories about myself and the world, and I still have a lot of strong opinions, but I don't quite buy into them as much as I used to, and they don't quite run my life the way they used to. And I find that that has given me a measure of peace, even in the midst of really, really big storms. And I'm really grateful for that. And I find myself wanting to share as much of it as I can with whoever is interested in it. And so when Carrie asked if I would be involved in this group, I couldn't say anything but yes. I've been looking for sangha that is closer to my own age as well, and as much as I've appreciated my experience at Sims over the years, when I walked in here and I looked around, I could kind of hardly believe it. So I'm really grateful to be in this room with all of you and getting the opportunity to practice with all of you. And I'm excited about this. Thanks.
You know, I mean, that's just inspiring. Just to see the interest, the fact that people show up to learn about this practice is, it kind of further kindles my own faith, and it's just wonderful, you know, it's just really a nice thing. I'm looking forward to, you know, doing this this community, young person class with these three ladies.
Under 40.
Under 40, not young-ish. I actually won't be at the first meeting, but I'll be back on the 26th of October. I'll actually be on retreat during the first continuation group, but I look forward to, hopefully I'll see some of you in the weeks and months to come. And so thanks again.
What should we do now? Thank you. That's really... What am I doing here? I'm the only out of the group. So this will be my last evening here, actually. And you can all meet with these four, and I'm sure you'll be well taken care of. But since we're here tonight together, maybe we should sit, which is what we ostensibly got together for. So let's sit, and I'll do a guided meditation, and we'll have... chance at the end of it. It'll be a shorter sitting. We'll have a chance at the end of it for some questions or comments, sharing your experience. So taking the first few moments to settle into a natural stillness in the sitting posture. Being careful not to tighten up or to try to assume some rigid, unmoving posture, but rather to settle into a relaxed posture. Letting the tension flow throughout the body. Wherever you feel tension or holding, to see if you can release that. Particularly around the shoulders, letting that drop. Letting your eyes close gently without squeezing shut. Unclenching the jaw. Relaxing the throat and tongue. And as you move the attention down through the body, unclenching the fists, relaxing the belly and the legs. Taking a moment also to acknowledge how you experience the environment of the room, feeling the temperature that you do. Taking notice of the ambient sound of the room and the occasional distinctive sounds, including my voice. And if you happen to notice an ambient odor of the room, just recognizing that is also being known. Take notice of the mind. Is the ambient flavor of the mind? Is there some excitement or happiness? Sense of ease in the mind or tiredness, curiosity? Just take a look and acknowledge the way it is for you. For now. Most of you are familiar with the use of an object in meditation. So if that's the practice that you're familiar with, using the breath, the nostrils or the belly, wherever you feel it. Or if you're using posture as a primary object of your attention, or some of you may be using hearing, then let your attention settle onto recognizing the primary object of your practice. Connecting your attention to the beginning of an in-breath, sustaining your attention for the duration of it, connecting again with the beginning of the out-breath, and sustaining your attention on it. Returning to attend to the posture of the body and what you feel in the sitting posture, if that's your primary object. And we use a primary object in practice like this in order to begin to calm the mind down, to bring our attention to the present moment more continuously. Letting everything else recede into the background of the mind. attending to the primary object without a sense of struggle or without any expectation or command or demand, but noticing the attitude of mind with which you're practicing. And see if you can be at ease and attentive. If you can be open and receptive. Attending to a primary object, when your attention is called to other predominant experience like sounds or strong sensations in the body or even thoughts, be willing to recognize those experiences also. Moment by moment, experience unfolds. And the purpose of this training is to recognize moment by moment life's unfolding. And as much as possible to be at ease with that. To use a primary object to train the attention. We don't want to struggle with it. We're not trying to avoid anything else that's being known, nor are we trying to create anything. You have a cold?
Yes, I've been really foggy. all day. It's really a struggle to be present in mind. My mind's just kind of dead. But it was an interesting awareness to recognize that difference. I think we talked a lot of times, both facing you in the room, have talked about looking for peace and calmness. And when I'm in a fog from a cold, I'm pretty calm, I'm pretty peaceful, but that's not, it's very noticeably different from being mindful and really being in the place that we're looking for in terms of being able to be present. So yeah, that was an interesting space to be able to recognize within that, which you can see right now as well as trying to think.
Yeah. You know, the comments is about being having a cold and being in a fog and just being not necessarily so mindful and calm, but under the effects of the cold. You know, it's in this practice, gradually we learn how to recognize and be with anything. And sometimes it'll be like, you know, you have a cold or you feel weak, the body's weak, the mind is weak, you feel kind of in a fog. And that's just what it is. But what's important is to notice how you're relating to it. Are you getting upset by it? Are you getting stressed out about it? Are you thinking it should be otherwise? Are you anxious? Because that's where we make trouble for ourselves. Everybody gets a cold at one time or another, or is sleepy, or has some aches and pains in the body. But how we're relating to it, that's really important. That's where mindfulness really has its, does its work. What happens to us just, well, it happens, doesn't it? You know, the body and the mind, they go through their stuff. Recognizing it is good, but watching how we're relating to it, that's the work of mindfulness. Really, not making things worse by having, by setting up an adversarial relationship or a struggle with the way things are. Yeah. That's good. Did somebody have a question? Other comments about practice? Questions about practice? Do you have any questions for me?
I do. What are you all feeling about taking this practice home? And do you think it would be easy to continue sitting if you've been sitting? What sorts of obstacles might you anticipate?
I certainly find that without a weekly like reset point or a reminder, it's hard to sit every day unless someone once a week says, you should really sit every day. So that's just something I've experienced before and I expect to happen.
Do you sit every day? Do you try to sit every day?
I certainly don't sit every day.
No.
I try to make space in my life to sit every day. Mm-hmm. And certainly make an effort to practice when I'm not sitting.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot more time in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Or I find myself able to do that. But yeah, sitting every day has always been something that's never materialized.
Why?
Oh, there's, that's a great question.
Just,
yeah.
It's, why not? I mean, if you want to,
right,
you see the benefit, but don't, what's happening?
So the best way I could explain it is that, my mind is very good at convincing me that it's just not the right time right now to do it. And it's either because I, like, basically, there seemed to have to be a symphony of circumstances that come together just so that I can sit. Like, it has to be there. So I live in a house with a couple of people. So, you know, there can't be a conversation going on next to me in the next room, for instance. can't sit now in bed. Or if I'm really tired after work, I'm like, oh, if I sit, I'm just going to fall asleep or something. So even though I know that those things are all, you can be aware of those things, there's some kind of, it's like I bounce off the idea of sitting when those obstacles are there. And I do sit the majority of days, so those things don't always prevent me. But there are a lot of days where, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen, even though there's no no actual reason why I couldn't do it.
Mm. Anybody else have that same kind of like, don't have the perfect conditions for practice? Is that why we don't practice? I know how hard it is to practice every day. It's not easy. Yeah. Even to have the aspiration to do it is hard enough, let alone finding the time, the place, and all the other supportive conditions.
I almost see that sometimes as a challenge that I like to put myself in those situations, where it's like, if there's a lot going on, I want to see if, like, okay, can I not so much tune it out, but just like be there with, like, the TV's going and, you know, this is also happening, and can I just be okay with it and, like, focus? And I don't know, I feel like it's made my practice a little bit better.
So you're willing to accept the challenge that conditions aren't perfect, you know, it's noisy, it's a lot of activity, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I know everything is sometimes. It's not always. Yeah. Are there other challenges with this practice?
I find that I get up at 5 because my workplace is like in Kent. So I'm trying to get like an hour in the morning, but it's really hard. So I what I've done in the past is I've tried to. So recently I got this off, so that helped me today. But prior to that, and prior to coming to Sims, I listened to this binaural beats thing, and it kind of keeps me awake at the same time. But it's supposed to put you in a meditative state. So that was something I tried. But I think, yeah, it's sort of challenging in the morning because I'm kind of tired. But I also do some right before I go to sleep, and that's actually, I get the most out of that part of the evening.
So you try to sit first thing in the morning, and you get the most out of sitting just before you go to sleep.
Yeah, I like to do it in the morning because it prepares me for work too, and it kind of puts me in the right mindset, I think. Mm-hmm. And for me, meditation has changed my life a lot, even before Sims. And it's helped me with the relationships I've had with my colleagues and also just even my neighbors. Mm-hmm. Everything just kind of, I noticed everything just sort of flowed really nicely after I started meditating.
It's really fascinating just to see how the day can go a lot smoother, it seems, when, you know, there's been that intention set in the morning, and that intention can sort of build some momentum through that initial sit, you know, whether 20, 30 minutes, and the day can seem a little more seamless, and it can feel a little more, when you're kind of dealing with others, feel a little more settled, and you can also read others, kind of facial cues, tone, inflection. You can kind of be more present with others in those ways, and I think that's a factor that also, you know, adds to the day going smoother and also relationships going smoother as well. So it can be a great way to start off the day.
Let's see.
The rest of the evening.
Oh, the rest of the evening. So just one comment about that is this. Just a couple comments about that that have been helpful for me. One is to, and oftentimes when people come through the beginning series, they notice how much easier it is to sit when they're in the group or when they're part of a series. So to really let the group intention help fuel your own intention as you're moving forward. I think to have that extra support is really helpful. And also to remember, what's been helpful for me is just to remember regularly why I'm doing it. Why am I doing this? It's not just an extra chore or extra expectation that I'm setting for myself, but what is really my deepest intention in meditating and revisiting that regularly. I also tend to go to extremes pretty easily. So when I get excited about something, okay, I'm going to do a lot of this. So in practice, I've often said, okay, I'm going to sit an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening, and I'm just going to do it. And it really wasn't realistic for my life circumstances at that time, and I petered out and then got frustrated. So to really be realistic but honest about what you can commit to, and then make the continuity the most important thing. So if you can only realistically sit 15 or 20 minutes, to do that regularly over time, you'll actually gain confidence in your own capacity to do that, and you'll gain momentum. Even though it's not an hour, morning and evening, you'll begin to kind of have more trust in yourself and be able to see more of those benefits. I think that's helpful to keep in mind as well. The rest of the evening, you can explain the treats. Well, you know about the treats.
How are you going to do it for the rest of the evening?
Well, first I want to make sure that everybody's questions about meditation are answered. I feel like this is kind of a scary kind of last chance to kind of troubleshoot and I don't know, clarify any sort of any lingering questions or just wanting to make sure people are walking away feeling like, okay, I kind of get what meditation is, kind of. Yeah.
I have a question about, this is my first formal meditation class, and it's been a very learning experience, and you know, starting to have some sort of enjoyable, interesting, fascinating insights. But then the question for going forward, you know, there's the good and the pleasant and the unpleasant advice for, you know, dealing with or overcoming or learning from, you know, the sort of very unpleasant or, you know, unhappy things you may discover through the practice.
So one of the maybe I'm not very representative of the population here, but one of the joys of the meditation practice for me is the ability to kind of be able to sit with unpleasant things in a way that society doesn't really teach us how to do. Something that has been so transformative is the ability to actually turn towards something that is unpleasant, whether it's an emotion or a conversation with a person that you need to have, or I don't know, just sirens blaring down the street, and to be able to kind of examine what is so unpleasant about the situation, and then to kind of see that there's this fear that has surrounded the unpleasantness, and when I'm really facing it, to be able to then discover that it's not
that scary or not that big of a deal, or I didn't really know what the fear was, but when I turned towards it, I realized that it wasn't the worst case scenario. So really kind of using the practice to I think deal with unpleasantness is the wrong word, but to explore and see what unpleasantness really is and how it's kind of controlling our lives, because we're trying to run from it or tuck it under the rug or deny that it exists. So kind of just bringing it back into part of the normal experience. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? Does anybody have any lingering? Yes, Chris.
So in this style, when you have lots of different experiences that may be competing for your attention, say there's a pain in the body, but there's also this overwhelming smell, and both are very strong, however, and they're happening at the same time, what do you do with your attention then? Do you investigate one or the other? Do you investigate both? Do you just settle back and see what awareness is in that moment?
My first impulse is to just say you can do all of the above, you know, and still be practicing skillfully. Yeah. One thing to look out for though is if there are competing experiences arising. Sometimes, you know, in practice, what can happen is that can sort of bring about kind of a mindset of indecision. You know, what do I attend to? And I think, you know, if that becomes the predominant mind state, you know, this kind of indecision, I don't know what to do, well, then that becomes what's worth investigating and exploring. So, does that answer?
You know, it's really interesting to hear your comments and then to hear your comments to them. It's really...
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's skillful, really skillful. And no, it's skillful and you know, very, I don't know, I wouldn't say I'm surprised, it's just, you know, it your voice of experience is clear that, oh, this is my experience, this is what I do. And just how you reframe, you know, the question from dealing with something unpleasant to learning to be with it, or as Vance just acknowledged, if you find yourself kind of like wondering, should I be doing this, should I be doing that, doing the other thing, well, let that become, that's the mental state, the mind state to observe. This, I feel totally confident that you carry on quite well. So I'm happy to, so you'll be meeting some people.
Yeah. So our first meeting will be this coming Sunday, October 12th, from 7 to 8:30 here. And just to let you know, it's not only open to people who've gone through this series, but really anyone who's had an introduction to Vipassana. It doesn't need to have been in this style. They could have gone through Rodney's series or another series or been to a retreat. So it's really open, it'll be ongoing and drop-in, so you don't have to commit to a certain amount of time. And we could also use a few volunteers to help us out with just opening the center and cleaning up a little bit afterwards. So it's not a huge commitment, and it's also a good way to kind of get to know people, and it would really help us out quite a lot. So if you have interest in that and availability, maybe you can talk to one of us after we break for snacks in a minute. So.
I have a question. You keep saying, do people have to have had some experience, some initial instruction before they can come on Sunday night, or just anybody can show up brand new?
It would be helpful if they've had some introduction. So not absolutely required, be totally lost if they're brand new, but at some point to have a thorough introduction would be helpful, even if it's online. So this whole series is online now. As is Rodney's beginning class. So some introduction, I think, is a good foundation, but we're not going to turn anybody away either.
And is there a cost to this?
There'll be a suggested donation. So if you're not able to pay or you can't pay the $5 suggested fee, that's fine. Nobody's turned away for an inability to pay. It's a suggested donation, $5.
Before we break, I just want to mention that on the table, on the desk when you came in, there's a couple of flyers. One is the scholarship opportunities for those of you who are interested in doing retreat at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts. And another flyer was put out tonight announcing a retreat at Cloud Mountain Retreat Center in...
Memorial Day weekend
of next year for young adults, right? And it's heavily subsidized, so it's a low cost, and we just shut it off, so I would encourage you to look into that. What is it, 4 days, 3 days?
Just the weekend, I think.
Just a weekend, two or three days, so take that opportunity. And there will be other opportunities at both those places, both Insight Meditation in Massachusetts and Cloud Mountain in Southern Washington.
And also, I know that we haven't done a really good job of talking this up, but everybody is welcome on Tuesday nights here. Like Carrie said, there's a lot more people. Probably all of these seats will be filled, but to kind of get that, if you're looking for added ongoing support and are interested in checking out another teacher, Rodney Smith, it's a really in-depth supportive community. So, should we do a ride share before we?